Hello, DJ Schwartz here. Welcome back to the Edge and Flow podcast. I'm here with Lucas Burnley. This is our quarterly update. For those of you that have been waiting for an episode, we
Jeez.
went from weekly updates to quarterly. Not intentionally, but yeah, here we are. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm glad we're doing this. Summer. That's what we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Like, I think the goal is to get back on like some kind of normal weekly cadence. It's really easy when we're doing it. It just like, man, coming into summer, it just like dropped off.
It's I'm trying to figure out a good balance for that with the summer because I love doing the pod. I think it's an important part of just our lives, even if it wasn't recorded, you know.
Same.
So but we kind of have a family motto. I always talk to the kids about work hard, play hard, which is super cliche, but and in the summer we work our 410s, and I try to just cram the 410s, just run hard for 40 hours, and then disappear for the weekend and just play hard all weekend. And we try to just maximize summer because we do live in Idaho, where in the high country, the beautiful places you want to be, summer is short. So we always try to squeeze every last drop out of it, which we have been. I'm happy about that, but it does leave us with this podcast that kind of gets sidelined,
Pushed to
which
the
is
side.
unfortunate. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've been on the flip side, which is like this whole year has basically just been growth. And so I'm running a schedule that is like 6-10, seven, sometimes 7-10s. And then right now Maddie and the boys are actually on vacation. I'm here because we've got basically projects and employees. So it's like the flip side, and it's like just in pieces. So I'm hopefully that's starting to level out. And but yeah, man, it's just schedules. This is the self-employed game. Good on you for making the weekends count right now, man. Usually we're good about that, but just this year we've done kind of like, I think, built too much almost
Yeah. Well,
to
it's okay to
get out of it.
sprint sometimes because I've done that.
That's what
That's
it feels like.
part of this summer is like the kids are 3 and 5, and I'm like the last couple summers, or honestly most of the summers with the kids, we've been renovating the house or doing this or that. And I'm like this summer, this spring, I kind of decide I'm like that's going to stop. The summer is going to be it's going to be for the kids because at 3 and 5, you fast forward 6 or 7 years even, and it's like things are going to be changing, so we got to do it now.
It
So
starts to
we
be like core memories,
so we kind of sold out for just weekends are going to be a good time. So, and speaking of good times, we just got back last weekend from a trip to the coast where we went to PNWCI. We saw you, saw a bunch of great people. So part of this podcast, we got to recap that.
Totally, man. Well, and you went as an attendee, just walking the floor, right? Which is pretty great.
For kids' first time at the ocean, that was one of the boxes we wanted
And
to check.
first show.
And first show.
So
Yeah.
it's pretty good. What'd they think of the ocean,
Dude, they loved it.
man?
Delta came back this week, and I was at work yesterday, and she spent most of the day drawing pictures of the beach
I
with like
love
her
it,
whole
man.
family and stuff in the water. And like we have some photos of like, because I want to show them out in the surf, like where the waves are pretty good. So I was holding them by the wrist so that they could go out there and get like hit by a wave pretty hard and I could hold them. And she drew a picture of that, which is just like, I don't know. You could tell
Dude,
it just stuck in her
that's
head.
magic, man. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, and so in that, you guys were RVing also, which is like a pretty big. It's like a pretty big upgrade.
It worked great, except for one night. Real fast story time. The
Dude, lay it out.
night before the show, we unfortunately found ourselves in a position where we were not allowed to be camping. It's kind of a long story. I maybe won't go into it, but we got ejected from our campsite at about 1 in the morning and had to drive for half hour looking for another spot. Ended up we were not in Seaside. We were in Cannon Beach when we got kicked out. We had to go to Seaside to try to find somewhere. Terrible night's sleep. I mean,
Of
worst
course.
night's sleep that I can remember. And then we went to the show. So it was, the show was amazing. I loved it. we had to leave the show and take a nap because all four of us were pretty much glassing over. And honestly, I could barely form sentences. So I had to go just take a power nap, came back, coming back to the show. That's
Rallied.
when I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So,
Dude, Wilson was like the embodiment of,
yeah.
I think, how all of you were filming. Is like, his like eyes are like rolling back in his head.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah.
yeah, dude, getting rousted is no fun. That happens, but yeah, not
Yep.
just shocking to like be woken up in the middle of the night, like by the police, and be like, you can't be
Yeah.
here,
Yeah. Yeah.
right?
It was interesting. I mean, I get it. I totally
Yeah,
understand. I don't blame him,
totally.
but it's rough in the moment. You know, it's
Yeah,
definitely rough.
nice.
But
Yeah, and I was on the flip side of actually doing the show. PNWCI is like, obviously now it's like my local show, which is what I consider it, right? Which is awesome. Small show, punches way above its weight, and it has since the very first one. And a lot of that is just due to Nick and Billy and their relationships in the industry. Like Billy put on that first show in Portland and basically just invited friends. He just had like a really good group of makers. And
Yeah.
so like you look at the roster and it was shock that first year, you're like, whoa, this is like kind of a who's who, you know?
Yeah, and I really like just the it's just for whatever reason, it's the people that I often like hanging out with at like the big shows
Yeah.
that just so happen to be at this show. You
It's
know, it's
kind of a distillation,
people that
right?
I'm
Like you
close
walk and you're
friends
like, you
with.
know everybody in the room for
Yeah,
the most part.
exactly. Yeah, I love that about it.
Pretty good. They do a good job of like bringing in some new makers. So Billy is like, is firearms industry too. So he was from a company called Rifle Dynamics and then went through Radian and now has Ironborn Armory, which is his own deal, and basically builds custom AKs, right? Like one
Wow.
MOA, sub MOA AKs, and they're awesome.
Wow.
Side note, Tom Crine and I actually went out like 3 days before the show and did an AK class with Billy where
Oh.
we built rifles
Whoa.
from parts, and it was freaking awesome. The only thing I can say is like if putting an AR together is like building a computer kind of, building an AK is like restoring an old car. There's a
Yeah.
lot of like grinding and hammering and like 20-ton presses. Like it's things that on a machine side like don't make sense. You're like, this is not precise. It's a lot of problem solving. It was so fun.
That's amazing.
And then you get to go run them and they like, you're like, oh, this thing like runs and
Yeah.
oh, it's awesome.
Yeah.
So
Bury
that
it in the
was,
sand and pull it back out and probably run just as good.
dude, so good. I didn't even like, I didn't send you pictures of like the
I
class or
didn't
like
even
what
know
we were
that. Yeah.
building or anything.
That's cool.
Yeah, I would highly recommend anybody that hears this, if you get a chance to do a class with Billy, I would definitely do that. Like get to go. He's one of the top, I think, AK builders in the country. Like the stuff is just super high quality, super reliable, accurate. It gave me a new appreciation for AKs, which was really fun. Also, it's one of those things, man. Like I told him in the class, I did a forging course a couple 7 years ago or something now, but I left and I was like, I feel like I'm a better craftsman, right? This felt the same way, where like mechanically you're just looking at pieces and you're like, okay, you're problem solving and
Yeah.
you're like, Tom built one, it's like it had names carved in the stock, like his guy's
Yeah.
girlfriend's name, like they're off of like a battlefield somewhere. They demil the rifle, right? So they like basically cut the receiver, cut the barrel. And so one of the things you're doing is mounting the original parts inside of a US made receiver to a US made barrel. But the receiver is like generalized. It's not like a mil spec part. Like AKs have been made all over the world. There's all these
Yeah.
idiosyncrasies. And so you're doing weird stuff and like shaping and like even sometimes like filling in holes with like weld,
Yeah.
and it's wild.
One thing that's cool too is it has the aspect of the kind of multi-medium going on where it's got the sheet
Yep.
metal.
Yep.
which sheet metal is a totally different ball game than like a billet part.
So different.
And I love sheet metal work, honestly. I for a,
Dude,
quite a
you
while, I
would
helped a local
love
company.
this. You would
That'd be
love
cool.
this. Actually, also, like for you, that's a modeling project that would probably be pretty interesting because you have
Yeah.
that sheet metal background. I don't know, pretty interesting. Also, see, you're like messing with this sheet metal receiver and it's all flexy and you're like, this is thin. Then you start to like rivet it together, right, with a 20 ton press and like just basically like steel rivets, and you're like, instantly it goes from like this floppy thing to just super rigid. And it's really impressive. Like you start to see like, oh, like where these like, stamped supports are put in, and it's cool.
I think all the time about what products we can make that are sheet metal based, either press braked or like stamped
Yeah.
or something, because I just enjoy it. It's such an efficient way to manufacture. And you know, you can make really cheap, kind of lousy stuff with that. But that's where, excuse me, that's where creativity and design comes in with sheet
Yeah.
metal, is you can make it so much more than it is, which I think that's kind of fun about it.
There's a level with stamping that I think, especially for certain tools, feels really good, right? It's like not overly done. Well, you saw that. I've got one. You saw this, right? The knife that Boker just did.
That's a perfect example.
It's a perfect example. So it's called the bifold, and it's basically just one piece of sheet metal folded over, and that is what makes the body. And like, I keep carrying one of these, and it's the same thing where I'm like, man, there's a lot of like personality to it. It's not as precise. Like, it's not super finished. And I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. So, okay, that was a huge digression, like pre-show, pre-show. But dude, that was the most fun I've had going into a show, I think, ever. It was so nice just to like hang out with Billy and Tom, not doing knife stuff, but like, I think the day we built the rifles, we did like 16 hours in the shop, just like hanging out, like, yeah, good
So
stuff.
normal day in the shop for Tom.
Yeah, man, coming into the show, I realized too, like, just what a shift that is. So the last 2 days before the show, I know I worked 18 hours, and then I worked 19 hours.
Oh.
After the 19-hour day, I worked a 12-hour day and drove to Portland. And you're
Oh.
like, this is not ideal, but show prep this year, like, again, it's summer. I did a lot of work pre-work, but then like the finishing stuff, I really tried to go super hard on like kind of what I was taking, because so far this is the only show I've done this year, and might be the only one that I do. And I just wanted to like bring
Yeah.
like really fun work,
Yeah.
but man, those last days, it's like it's a
That's a push,
lot.
man. That's a
Yeah,
big push.
it's a big push. So yeah, what else about the show? This is your first time there, so like observations, I'd be curious to hear.
Observations. I love Seaside, the town.
Yep.
The coast is obviously the coast, but Seaside, we did quite a loop. So we saw a lot of towns. I really came to like Seaside in particular. It's more laid back. Some of them are a little bit more guarded about parking and camping. And
Yeah.
like,
So like
obviously, there
Cannon
was the
Beach is a
incident.
great example. Like it's a little more upscale, it's a little smaller town, it's like higher end beach community, right? Smaller. Seaside's cool because it almost feels like, I don't know, like 80s like beach town,
Well,
kind of like
it's like a real town. It's not
a real town.
strictly
Yeah.
for, you know, entertainment and
Right.
visiting. It's like a
Yeah.
town. So they have, you know, we went and let the kids play on the playground at the school there. Like they have a really nice, and it was probably a high school.
Yep.
And it's just like, it's a cool town. You could envision living there, whereas most of those towns I really couldn't.
Yeah.
So I like Seaside. That's part of it. And then the event center is really cool. Really nice facility right there close to the beach. So overall the environment is probably the best of any show that I've been to. It's hard to beat that. And then
It's pretty great, yeah.
the show itself, it's like it's small in a good way in that it feels a little bit like Maker Syndicate, but even
Okay.
smaller. because you can go in there and you can have like these circles of makers discussing things, and it's like you can almost be at your table and still talk to quite a few people, it appears. You know what I mean? Because it's small enough that it's like very social show, whereas a lot of the shows are not very social if you're the maker, because you're just sort of in a sea. And you may have like one guy to your left, one guy to your right, you can kind of talk with, but there, especially, a couple hours in, it's just like kind of a, I don't know, like a social just sort of environment, and people are talking about cool things and a lot of interesting people. Like I said before, a lot of people that I normally hang out with anyway. I immediately wanted to come back. My wife was with me. That was her. Not her first show, because I think she went to like a Blade Show West or something way back, but she loved it and she wants to go back. So
It's
overall,
a
just
family show. Like that's
yeah.
the okay, so where Blade Atlanta is awesome, like one of the biggest things about Blade is the pit.
Yeah.
And unless you've gone, it almost doesn't translate, but that social event is so important to the overall weekend. This show, you're basically just in like you're at the beach for it, right?
Yeah.
And I
Yeah.
mean, the close of the show is like, Nick and Billy have a beach party, like a bonfire. There's always some kind of barbecue. And it's like a perfect kind of like finale for the show. But up until that point, like everybody comes in early and you're just tucked into this little town where it's like you can go out to like breakfast or you can go have lunch or grab a beer, go to a bar. Or, like a lot of people are coming in, starting to now come in from like the East Coast and stuff. It's like you can drive down and like see like Haystack Rock or, do something in Portland the day before. It's really impressive because it's not the most convenient show to get to if you're coming in from away. But I kind of love that because if you go, it's worth it, right? But you have to fly into Portland and then drive out to the coast, which is like an hour and a half. But no, man, I'm this year was really, really fun. Just a good, it's like a good vibe show. So
That's the best way to describe it for sure.
yeah, right size. The convention center is really good in that like it doesn't feel cramped. It's super easy access, like basically surrounded by hotels, but it's still small and the show is 6 hours. So, as a maker, like you get these different show vibes where like Blade Show is like, as far as I'm concerned, kind of like a must do from an industry and networking standpoint. Then you go to like the 2 day shows, right? And then you have these, 4 hour, 6 hour shows. So you have Maker Syndicate, you have the Kentucky show, which is Kicks, you have Seaside now. And I think it's really good just to kind of spread out the type of show you do as a maker, because each one of them provides a different kind of insight or I don't know, like just value inside of the industry, right? So,
Which is it, this show kind of kept bringing Maker Syndicate to my mind, because I think Maker Syndicate is similar kind of vibe, and I don't know if that's going to happen again. I know it was put on
I
hiatus at the
heard
very
people
least.
talking about it, and it sounded like, because it's Oz Machine Works, right, that puts it on. So it sounded like they're like building a new shop or setting something new up, and they took
Building
a
a building.
pause this year, and then are bringing it. I heard a bunch of people say they're bringing it back
I
next
hope
year.
they bring it back. Yeah, because that was up there with PNWCI as far as the environment and the size of
And it
it
was
and just the
bigger.
people is bigger. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
How many years did they have that?
Probably like only three, maybe,
That's what I
or
was thinking,
something.
something like
Yeah.
that. Okay.
Yeah.
And where is it?
Indianapolis, downtown.
Indianapolis. It's great too, because it's almost another wild card as far as location. Because
Place
the
I'd be unlikely to go there just randomly. So to
right.
have a show just that like quadrant of the country, like the Midwest,
Yeah.
I haven't spent any time there. And so just going there, it's a nice city, really clean city. It's got, the stadiums and the race car tracks, and everywhere you go, there's race cars. It's like that they call it the racing capital of the world and all that. So there's just so much there, beyond just the show, and it's just a nice town. So definitely worth
That's pretty
going.
good. Well, I think for a while the shows were really, they were like the institutions almost, right? So you had like, you have like the California shows, you have the Las Vegas shows, you have shows in New York, show the, Atlanta. And it seems like there's a shift that happened where some of those shows kind of like split. Like now there's two CCKS, there's a spring and a fall. Tied in with those, there's like the Friday Night Blade Affair. There's, Knicks kind of spread out a little bit. And where did they go? Geez, now I can't actually think of where the second show went. But Knicks is back, right? Which is Jersey City. But then these smaller things kind of started to pop up, right? And like Blade Texas was originally the ICCE show, which was like a Western symposium, right? And then it kind of like split off from that. That's become like a really strong contender. For me, I'm noticing like I love these shows that feel like Blade Texas feels like Blade Atlanta when I first started. It's smaller, but it has like a similar kind of vibe to it. And then I think Seaside, PNWCI, almost feels like early USN, where it's just like real strong community. Like, it's good. Good stuff. Yeah.
Show culture is thriving.
It really is, man. You're doing Blade West, right? Okay. So that's your next
October
spot,
10th.
October 10th. Okay.
We
Nice.
can drive down to that. I already got everything booked up, ready to
Dude,
go. That's gonna be fun. I love that show.
that's becoming more important to me. I think over the next few years, just like with the kids and where I'm at with schedule and work, like shows that I can drive to, I think become really valuable. So I'm basically looking at one, like maybe one show where we fly, and then one of the California shows, and PNWCI is kind of like the rotation. If we can get to a point where product is more consistent, right? And I have, this is also really important too, which is I think product should be tailored to the show a little bit. Like the value of one of the values of bl like Blade Atlanta is just volume. Right. So if I'm going to have five folders, it's not always the right venue for that. If I've got a run of like a special edition Kihoku or something, then you're like capitalizing on it. Right. So I think that output will dictate some of that. But right now, man, like just the ability to jump in the car, even if it's a 13-hour drive, it just feels like less overall stress and logistics. So, yeah.
It's
What other updates? So we literally haven't recorded in 3 months. What, just like shop updates on your side? Like, are there any shifts, or have you guys just been stable?
So we've been relatively stable from a bird's eye view. There's been one, I guess you could call it a battle we've been fighting, which is on the bevel grinding side. We started bevel grinding the Overland Sport the second that machine landed, and it went extremely smoothly and it was pretty effortless, and it built up a ton of confidence in the grinding, which was awesome because that was a knife that we sell a lot of and we needed more efficiency. But then we tried to grind the full size Overland, and so a couple months in, we converted that model over, and it's given us some headache for sure. It's a
Really?
lot taller bevel, it's a lot longer bevel, it's a thicker blade. It's just, as far as total volume of steel being ground off, it's probably like four times higher than the Sport.
Got it.
And so we've been having this like anomalous burning problem with it, and really just chasing all avenues of feeds and speeds and stuff to try to get it not to do that. And we probably scrapped like 25 of them trying to get this to work. And it's weird because it's like we'd get three or four that are good, and we'd think, okay, we finally nailed it. Then it would burn. So we change another setting, do something else. Three or four would be good, another one would burn. And we decided to, basically, we did a few things. We tried to increase coolant delivery. We worked on using through spindle coolant, and then we decided actually the better way to do it was the Sile X9 has a washdown feature. So it's got another pump that's the same as the flood coolant pump.
Okay.
That sits there, and it all it does is spray the floor of the enclosure when you're running. And that's for like if you're machining aluminum, like billet aluminum, you end up with like massive piles. And we don't run it because we don't have chips. It's grinding. So it's all just, if you look at what's coming off, it just looks like coolant. It's not until it settles that you see the grinding debris in it. And so that pump's been sitting there idle. What we did is we routed it to the table. So we have two table mounted jets that spray coolant up inside the wheel. Okay. So when the wheel comes down over the part, there's the jets aimed inside of it. And then the wheel's spinning and it's an inverted cup. So you have the spinning of the wheel creating like this almost little hurricane cyclone of the coolant that's jetted up into it. And so that way, when it comes down and grinds, you have the flood coolant coming from the outside. And then this new flood coolant on the table coming from the inside. And we finally got it to work. I think we've run enough overlands now to where it appears
to be consistent.
Successful.
So the through spindle coolant, you are running it and it's not enough.
So the through spindle, we were working on developing how to deliver coolant using the through spindle because you have to engineer some sort of like
nut
spraying
with a
nut.
Nozzle,
yeah.
basically.
And so we were kind of halfway done with doing that. And just out of curiosity, I wanted to try something, which is the hoses coming from the through spindle pump are the same as the hoses going to the flood coolant pump or the flood coolant delivery. So I was like, what if we, cause the through spindle is a way bigger pump, way more pressure and volume. And I thought, real quick, let's just actually hook the through spindle pump to the flood jets so that we get like two or three times as much pressure. And I was like, that actually might do quite a bit. And I just wanted to test it while we're working.
And it's
on
working.
The,
so you haven't well, actually used through
no,
spindle.
So we haven't used through spindle, but here's what happened. We ran this high pressure pump and we liked it. And it did seem like it was delivering more cooling. But the catch was, that pump is so big and it had to build so much head pressure because it's trying to, the pump's engineered to build pressure because it's trying to press. Normally it would be pressing through like a drill or something.
Right.
And so it's all about pressure, not about volume. And so it's basically building head pressure, which generates a lot of heat in the coolant. And so in one day of running that pump through the flood coolant jets, it heated up our coolant like unbelievably. I mean, when you open the door of the machine, it was like opening a sauna. It was like pure heat coming
Whoa.
Out and like everything was moving around tolerance wise and stuff. And so basically we looked at it and we're like, well, we could run through spindle, but it's going to build even more head pressure and even more heat when it's pushing it through smaller jet holes. And so it's not a deal breaker. You could work around that, but that was when I kind of started to get a little more creative and thought about if you're running a much smaller pump and flooding it inside the wheel from the table, I think you're getting more coolant delivered, quite a bit more volume with way less head pressure because it's not backed up trying to pump it through like small channels. And so we're getting, I think, more coolant with almost no noticeable heat buildup. And so the through spindle, I actually think, at least for now, is not necessary, and I would not have bought it if I had known this solution would work. So that's kind of
don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Crazy. Okay, that's good to know. We're like, that's kind of the next stage. Maybe not the next stage. I've got to do the next round of changes to the Kihoku. And then we're trying to get the turn back online. My biggest push is to get the second machine running. So that's kind of like the immediate need. So now that the show is done, like I went and I put coolant in the machine yesterday and did like a warm up cycle and just like starting to try to like force myself to like acknowledge that I have a machine sitting in a room not being used. Yeah. Okay. That's a, I mean, that's like a lot of development though on your side. And that with any of this stuff that we're doing, it's so hard sometimes because you'll get it to work in an area and then it won't work when you change
Yeah.
something.
Yep.
And then you have to figure out like, oh, well, okay, what changes this?
Yeah.
Like what shifted? And there's not like a manual for it.
Yeah. Well, what I kind of like about it though is the Overland was going to test, the full size Overland was going to test the limits of cooling. And cooling is basically the metric by which you're going to know how fast you can grind, because
Right.
it's the speed with which you can grind is purely how fast you can cool it.
Yeah.
That's really the simplicity of it. And so the beauty of it is we've worked so hard on keeping the Overland cool that now, like, the Overland Sport is now
No
benefiting.
problem.
And so
Right.
the next move, we just wanted to get everything stable first, but the next move now is to start to speed up the grinding of the sport, because now we know we have like twice as much coolant delivery, and it never had
Right.
any issue with half that much coolant. So I believe we'll be able to like just lower cycle times on the other models, because I assume we now have twice the cooling. We should be able to go faster. So the benefit of having the Overland give us issues is we just improve the overall process. So it's good to know.
Yeah.
One thing I
Frustrating in the
wonder,
moment, though.
what, yeah, it's been annoying. Scrapping that many knives has been
Yeah, it's
really
hard.
frustrating. But one of the things I think might be happening, I can't guarantee this, but we're doing a really shallow grinding where the blade is only tipped down 2 degrees, and so
Right.
it's trying to put basically a flat grind on it.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of times you'll see these cup wheel grinds where they'll tip the tip down either
They're
five
hollow.
or even 10, 15 degrees and do a true hollow. I don't know. But it might be that you get less heat buildup when you're at a more aggressive angle of attack like that.
Well, you
I
just
don't
get
know.
more aggressive grinding. I would say 100%. And that
Yeah.
translates to a belt grinder too,
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Because you have a smaller contact patch,
Yeah. Yep. It's
right?
more
And so
concentrated. Yeah.
more concentrated, but also more coolant getting in,
Yeah. Yeah.
probably.
Probably.
You have this is maybe a silly question, but did these wheels theoretically, like if you were able to have it stay cool, do these wheels need to run wet?
Yes, I think.
Okay, so they do need to run wet. You couldn't run like where I was thinking was we've been using a cold air system for hard milling.
Yeah.
You know, basically
Yeah.
it you know like a sub-zero airflow.
Yeah. I
I
think if
just
you didn't
wonder.
have a complete
Yeah.
submersion in coolant, you would
Yeah.
start a fire, like
You'd
in
start it
one
just
second.
going.
Because if you feel the abrasive, it's
Yeah.
extremely. It may be a high grit or like a
Right.
large grit technically, but it's compacted into what feels like basically a piece of stone. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
It's
it's like
like a stone.
ceramic.
And so it doesn't have ejection capability like what like a 60
Yeah,
grit
yeah,
belt
yeah.
does. It
Got it.
doesn't have the ability to eject heat at all. It's like taking the feel, having done some hand grinding, is like a 400 grit belt
Right.
going straight to steel with like tons of pressure. And not
Right.
taking it off the belt. That's
Not,
basically
yeah.
what's happening.
It's
And it's
terrifying.
like
You really
it's gonna
need, yeah.
completely incinerate. Because like for
Well, and it's like
example, I know.
surface grinding, like people dry surface grind. Like, and that's amazing to me, but it is just a function of the grit of the wheel, your
Yeah.
feeds and speeds.
Yeah.
You know, and there's like
And
if
it's
you're a good surface grinder, you can grind dry.
yeah. And part of it's the like on a surface grinder wheel, you do a really, really coarse dress,
You do a coarse
because if
dress,
you're
yeah.
seeing sparks, that's awesome. Sparks mean the heat is leaving. It's not
Right.
staying on the part.
On the
Um,
part.
whereas you're not generating sparks with these CBN wheels, because
Right.
it's such a fine grit, and it's
How are other people dealing with the cooling problem? Well, one, most people are doing a hollow. So
yeah, most people doing hollow.
that's different, right? You can't
Most people
compare the
doing through spindle
results.
coolant.
Yep.
And part of it is just the steel too. It's 64 Rockwell MagnaCut. So as far as I haven't ground anything else, but I would bet you it's one of the it's other than maybe 3B, it's one
Right.
of MagnaCut at that hardness is very hard to grind. So
You're asking a lot out of the
yeah.
steel. When Chris Reeve was doing it originally. What were they running, like S30?
Original, I don't know
Probably.
when the grinding came in relative to the
Right.
steel, because
Right.
S35 probably came after the grinding. You're probably
Right.
right. So it's probably S30 and maybe some A2 as well.
Yeah. A2. Yeah. Okay. So same thing. Like, yeah, because I was thinking if you're doing this on like CPM 154, you're getting a different result.
And one thing
You
is
know?
like Nitro V and ABL, they hard mill so well
Yeah.
that I wonder how that would translate to this, to grinding, because they're not equivalent, grinding and hard
Right,
milling.
man. So I'm running Nitro V Kihokus right now and I'm hard milling them. And I sent you a picture. Like there's chatoyance on the bevel. And it's crazy. You're like, it just mills beautifully. I bet that steel would take grinding pretty well. I'll probably try it. Like I like jumping around a little bit. And so I think that for me, especially with all this stuff that I'm kind of learning, I'll probably try that.
I'd like to mess with grinding some other steels. I know it's a big difference. Grinding is one of the things that will really reveal the difference in steels, different harnesses and different alloys. Milling not necessarily hard milling, but like soft milling steel, I think the window of how different they are is smaller. Because yes, 3V is going to be harder on tools than,
Yeah, like we see it with magna cut,
154.
soft milling magna cut, it's still like you still notice it
It's more
wear goes
difficult.
up.
Yeah, but when you harden it and you start grinding it, that's where it's like, whoa. Yeah, there's a huge difference, because the wear resistance kicks in with that hardness, and you get like 3V, and 3V is not a high wear resistance steel, but that, I guess, suppose the toughness. I've just heard 3V in general is one of the hardest to work with when it comes to grinding, but that's not
Grinding and
my own
finishing, like most
experience.
things grind easily, low grit, and then you just in the finishing,
Yeah,
that's where it
it just
really
won't
that was
take
like
it.
S35 VN2, and you start to like get different, need different processes. Okay, so that's been your big thing. What do we got?
Yeah, how about you?
Ours, yeah, man, it's just been working through production stuff, trying to get employees up to speed and processes improved. And then having like minor setbacks, like just little stuff, like all of a sudden my computer, I've got like a little NUC that can't be upgraded and it stops my graphics stop processing Fusion 360, or it's like these little minor things.
So can I pause real fast? I'm having a bit of an allergy situation. I gotta go blow my nose or something.
And then kind of show we were pushing really hard for it, Blade Atlanta, and I just got to a point where I realized that like we're starting to like fight an uphill battle, and it just got to the point where I realized like it would have cost too much time to make it work, and I wouldn't have been happy with the results. And so again, man, it's like we can do anything kind of, but not everything. And it was a really hard gut check of just like I was in a position where I had put too many things in motion to be able to follow through on that. So yeah, it's been a really interesting year, because I mean, look, it's like we added the new property, we added the new machine, we added two
Employees.
employees, and
Yeah, that's huge.
that's insanity.
It is.
Like any one of those things would have been enough to mess with my schedule and output, and I just realized I'm like, that's why like right now Maddie and the boys are on vacation, is just I realize I'm like, I'm not willing for them to lose like a big chunk of summer just because I'm like bogged down. And it feels really good to be able to do that. It's frustrating because I'm like, I would like to be with my family right now. But that's kind of the goal. Like right now, Seaside was kind of like the dividing line where now I don't have anything on the books and I can just do internal work. So the focus shifts fully to getting the machine running, improving processes, and then this show is actually really helpful because I made some small changes to how I was getting ready for it. I kind of thrive on the chaos of show prep creatively, but it's also really hard because it becomes kind of all encompassing. And when what I figured out, I was telling somebody this years ago, I saw a picture from Kit Carson and he had like these Tupperware bins full of like 80% folders. Like, so this would be like the blades are fit open and close and like the handle scales and bolsters are fit, but it's not contoured, not ground. If I was at that point, that's almost where show prep should start, not machining parts to finishing. And so I think what I'm going to do is basically try to get to a point where I can a show kind of like, okay, I know that I'm going to want to take like five folders and 25 side pops and 10 fixed blade or something like that, and just get all of the rough work done and set them aside. So yeah, man, I don't know. It's just like you
Like put
said,
it in a glass
summer.
case with a hammer. It says like break in case of emergency.
Yeah, break in case of show. Like, is but that's honestly, that's kind of how it feels. 'Cause usually, like, dude, I mean, 2 days before the show, I was still machining SiPops. Like, the folders were done, which I felt really good about, but I was like modifying and like doing customs. And I was like, this isn't, I can't, at that point, I can't separate. It's like, I can't really run short modification programs on the CNC and be doing finishing. And so I'm like, I get stuck where I'm like, okay, right now I'm running parts and I'm losing time. It's like, I'd rather just be full creative finish mode or full machine mode. And that's right now I'm noticing it 'cause I'm in a little bit of manager mode. And it's an interesting flow 'cause I'll like get really hooked into something that I'm doing and then somebody will need something. Or they'll finish a job and I'm like, oh, okay, I gotta find something else for you to do. And that's just like right now, I was telling you before we jumped on, like everybody is kind of a Swiss Army knife employee. Like you've got to be able to do multiple things and there's not really a job description. There's probably like kind of an area, right? But like Levi's crushing it. He's doing content. He's also helping Maddie with shipping. He's also doing like some website stuff and starting to like run the laser, but they're all related. Same with Isaiah, where it's like he can run the machine, he can help me finish, profile parts, he can help build sheaths, and there's usually a few things going on at once, but if I get bottlenecked somewhere and that workflow stops, they're not self contained at this point. So that's like changing. It's just interesting going like having this a productive output and a creative output is really tricky for me. Like I don't know how people do it better than what I'm
That
doing.
is, I can totally concur. That's a huge battle for me, is there's the spreadsheets, the production, the Kanban, the getting employees set up with the right tooling, getting this program modified to not do this XYZ, when also it's like, oh, I gotta design something. It's, oh yeah, that's
The
tough.
design one is really a wild card in there, especially like for you and me, where we're both, it's like we have this ability to generate passive income and also just like keep the connections open. I love my production collabs, right? My ideal scenario for production collabs is that I'm actually prototyping new models, right? That is becomes more difficult. Because now you have like this more consistent workflow and it's hard to find time to be like, okay, I'm gonna like go make something completely random. So what I'm hoping right now is that as we get the new shop up and running, that I can start to pull some of that time back. I don't know if it's a pipe dream, but that's where my head's at
I
right
think you
now.
can. I think you can. I feel like I've started to earn a lot more of that time back. For a good couple years, I had no time for that. We just had too many fires. But it started to feel like I have that time in most weeks. I could set aside a day, so it's starting to come back.
That's awesome.
Really good employees that are awesome. Have learned enough now where they can self-start. I can answer questions, but like they have the tools, and so it's just, you have to kind of carve that out and build them up, and eventually, yeah, it can be done.
Tell you what, that the self-starting thing is really critical. I had kind of in my head, I realized I'm like self-start or no start. It's like there's not a place with us for someone who is not a self-starter. So that would be if anybody's listening and you're like trying to get into an industry that is similar to ours, whatever that may be, like it could be like someone building custom cars or like a gunsmith, or the way that you make yourself most valuable is by like seeing the things that we're not telling you to do.
Yeah,
It's like little
exactly.
stuff. It's like, dude, inside of a shop environment, it's like, is a trash full? Dude, is somebody carrying something out to be shipped? Is it's like, one, you're just thoughtful and polite. Two, you look at it as an ecosystem. Right. It's like tribe rules. It's like everybody carries their weight. Everybody tries to see where they can help the system. If you are only focused on the one job that you have and then are needing someone to tell you the next thing, like obviously you need to be taught and you need to be told when there's like a job shift or like a priority, but there's always something to do. Right. And this is not even to say like, don't like I worked in welding shops when I was a kid, and like there was like this mentality of like, walk fast and look worried. I hate that. Like, I don't want people in. I want people to feel comfortable. Like, dude, take a break when you need a break. Eat food when you need food. Like, it's common sense rules, right? I'm not like counting down minutes, and I'm not like you need to be busy
Well,
every minute of the
it
day.
comes from a place of trust too, because it's
Totally.
like having the right fit of people that it's like, well, if they're taking a break, it's like, yeah, they need a break. I
You need a
trust that.
break. And
You know what I
some of the
mean?
stuff that we do is like I'm always harping on like, dude, you have to take breaks, more breaks. Like, I'm like, if you're on the grinder, like make sure you're going outside, like stretch your shoulders, like do this stuff. But in that also comes this thing of just like, you just need to do what you need to do. And after a little while, you need to be anticipating. Just like you see the flow, like, right? So that's been an interesting one for me because I'm like, I don't always know how to articulate that. Right. And like you and I were talking about it before we jumped on a little bit. It's like we've done every single job in our business. I think I'm probably getting to a point where maybe soon that's not true. I don't even know. Maybe that's not though, man. Like, I don't. It just is higher levels. It's like we're getting to a point where I could have someone helping me who has a higher skill set in an area than I have. Right?
You could maybe say like, I have done that part of the job before, but I was half-assing it, and now I got a legit person doing it.
Accounting was like the first one that you and I have talked about that, where it's like that was the biggest shift. We're like, yeah, I did my taxes. I wasn't a CPA. Right? So
There's a
yeah,
place
I
for
don't
that,
know.
but
That's kind of where we're at right now, man. Like, kids are going back to school. Winston's going into kindergarten, which is crazy. So the boys go to the same school. It's like, I think you and I are kind of excited to start back up on the pod now, like sensing fall and just like kind of a return to, I don't know, like the seasons. It's like it is at this work. Our work is not seasonal. But like life is in general, so
Well, and in some sense, I feel like our work kind of is a little bit seasonal, because I've noticed once we got to the point where we had a lot of capability capacity to where, because there's a point where it's like, if you have very, very small capacity, seasonality of demand for your product is not very detectable,
Right, that's where we're
because
at, right? Like, our demand is always consistent.
exactly, because it's like, if your ceiling is below the floor of the seasonality, you will never detect the seasonality. But for us, it's like we've scaled fast enough, and especially with the bevel grinding, hiring Steven, having more capacity this year, it is now detectable that we have summer, which is, if you look at any, you just Google summer slump,
Everybody knows it.
anything bought on the internet is the main thing. is going to be slower in the summer because if someone has $1,000 of discretionary income,
Right.
they're going to spend it, and they're going to spend it probably on going to the beach. They're going to spend it
Yeah.
on putting fuel in their truck to pull their camper. They're going to spend it on going to
Right.
the restaurant and sit out on the patio. And so
Yeah.
it's like internet is just less interesting to people when the weather is good. And
Man,
so
as it
we
should be.
yeah, which is
That's great.
totally reasonable. But I at first that like bothered me because I was like, you look at Q4 of last year, and that's obviously
Right.
peak, especially for knives,
Right.
because they're a
Right.
very quintessential gift for
Right.
like a holiday. And so you get this really crazy spike in the winter where everyone's super, super short days, they're bored, they're thinking about being outside, they're buying gifts. And then I hate the feeling of seeing demand slow down going into summer, but I've seen it 4 years in a row now.
Yeah.
I just wasn't really
You know.
I
Yeah.
can see it and feel it, but I at the time we didn't have the capacity anyway. Now we do. But one of the things I wanted to do mentally this summer is wrap my head around the fact that this is an opportunity, because if the slower parts of our year as far as selling knives are the part of the year where I want to disappear in the mountains,
Yeah, that's great.
that's like a fantastic thing. The fact that the seasonality aligns, because it's like if I had a business that, sold, products by the seashore, and
Right.
the time when I want to have fun is the time when the demand is there.
Yeah.
That kind of sucks. So I'm like really happy actually about the fact that it slows down a little bit in the summer.
Yeah.
And then we get to spend the summer kind of planning for how are we going to make the Q4 effort the best
Right.
possible way. And so then days get shorter, it gets cold, it gets snotty, muddy. We don't have the best kind of winters around here, so that's where it's like
Right.
just work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that's I'm starting to formulate a seasonal mindset to life right now, and I think it's great.
I
I think
would
it's
love to know, like, that's one area of the knife industry. Like, I always kind of harp on the fact that it's hard for new makers to know, like, what to expect financially, like, what to plan for. You know, there's no, it's not like you can look up, like, pay scales. You know, and that actually has always bugged me. It's the same, like knife companies start to be easier because like you can see a report or like there's some ways to like kind of see that. But I would love to know like small shop early on. Like I was just thinking of Timberline knives for some reason, where it's like in the back of my mind, I remember that I think one of the owners like would go to Mexico on like his sailboat. And I'm like, when were you doing that? Right. Like, what was it the same reason? Was it like this would have been like, I don't know what, like 80s or 90s? And it's like, was it show season was over? Or, and maybe that's the thing too, where it's like there used to be more seasonality around shows. And now there's kind of like a show every other month. Like, you can hit something. Right. So you have like CCKS is spring is I think February or something. You know, March
Texas in
is
March.
Texas. And then
January is SHOT
oh
Show, which
yeah,
doesn't count,
January
but
SHOT Show, but it kind of does for us, right?
yeah.
And then you've got June. There's probably something in April. Like, I mean, it's a constant thing, right? Yeah, creating seasonality is a good, that's probably just like a good idea. I need to create space around the holidays and around summer. Like that's kind of what I realize, right? One thing that I'm really struggling with is I had built for so long, I built my life to like not have to do things when other people were doing things, right? So one, as a bartender, like, I mean, I had years of like just being like, oh God, on weekends is crazy. And I'm working. That's when I'm making money, right? But we go out on a Thursday night or a Tuesday night. That rolls into being a maker where it's like, no, I can do things midweek and avoid crowds. And so it's interesting now being a little more tied to like a work schedule, right? And also a kid's school schedule. And so I'm kind of relearning. Oh, I actually do have to be really intentional about things like vacations, where it used to be that I would just take time when I needed it, kind of. And now it's like, well, the kids are off school now, and this is between shows. Okay, we need to like maximize for
You got to
that.
make it count.
We
Yeah, you
have
got
to
to
make
make
it
it
count.
count.
Yeah, grown up problems.
Yeah. No,
So.
I'm in the same boat. Yeah, and it's good. I think the big thing that we are learning too is you have to also think about, so we've been scaling capacity pretty much all out. And you have to think about that with relation to the seasonality too, because
Yep.
what I would, if I look at basically every machine I bought, every person I hired, everything, pretty much every time it was at the awkward wrong time to do it, because in about February or March, we're exhausted. Q4 was insane. It is really tough to keep up. And then so it's like, man, I have to hire. I have to buy this machine. I have to do something. But guess what? You have 6 months ahead of you where what the
It's going to
capacity you
slow
had
down. You would have got a natural break.
was probably adequate. Yeah, there would have been a natural break. So this year, I'm thinking about that more intentionally, that it's like we're gonna get
Oh, that's good.
squeezed this Q4.
Right.
We're gonna get squeezed hard because we have a lot more capacity, but overall we have a pretty strong growth trend, even with the downturn of summer, like we still have just an overall climb.
Yeah.
And so if we go into Q4, it's the data looks like we're gonna get squeezed, but I have to resist the urge. If we're gonna grow and scale from a capacity standpoint, I need to actually hold the horses until about middle to late summer
Okay.
before you're trying to hire or buy or do
Or buy,
something.
but you're in that. That's the
Yeah.
thing is like now you're in that mode.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm still saying shipping and logistics like is what you need next.
Could
Something
be.
in that
Yep.
shop mom, like
Yeah.
in that mode
Yeah.
where that especially going into the holidays probably
Yeah.
starts to free you up a lot.
What I may be doing this year is I think we need to buy another machine,
Ooh.
which is not a huge purchase. We're looking at possibly getting the most basic model Tormach 770, like the most, they're like $11,000 brand new or like
Brand
five
new,
grand
yeah.
used. And the reason for that is purely for scheduling, getting the Tormach right now is running a lot, pretty much all our scales and our sheets. And
Okay.
scales are Dalton, sheets are Steven. And there's
Okay.
every week, there's like a little bit of like a dance of trying to get each of their work done and kind of always interfering with each other. And like, it's just once you start running scales, oh shoot, we had to scrap a sheath. We can't make it again. Right. So it's just that competition right there. And what is required of a machine to make the Kydex part is so little. Like, even the Tormach we have is way overkill for Kydex. And
It's pretty
so a
interesting.
really inexpensive, like if I could get one used, that'd be great for like 6 or 7 grand, just to alleviate the scheduling conflict of that machine would
Yeah.
be I think re really good money well spent. We don't need it right now because it's summer and we're kind of cruising, but I think this winter it would help.
Yeah,
So
see,
I'm
but
kind
that's the
of
thing.
low
It's
key
like we're
shopping
so
that.
need-based. We're re like a lot of times it's
Yeah,
reactive. You're like,
reactive.
oh,
Yeah.
I need to fix it now. And you're like, no, you needed to fix it 6 months ago. Like, and then now you wouldn't be having a problem. So you've ended up on the Tormach as kind of like the solution for Kydex. Single tool.
Single tool.
Single tool. And you can run a sheath with that with a single tool. It does the work.
Yeah, an
Yep.
eighth inch
Okay.
end
Holes
mill,
are interpolated and right.
down cut. Yeah, down cut
Yep.
end mill. You get better finishes that way. And then you go perimeter machine, interpolate all your holes. And interpolating is way better than drilling on Kydex, I found, because we did a lot of drilling when we had our older fixture set up. And like a quarter inch drill to just punch out a quarter inch hole seems intuitive. Drills just, they exert a ton of pressure,
And they
whereas an
pull.
interpolate, and they pull and they bite and they like, they just, on a thin little piece of soft Kydex, it's just not reliable. It's not ideal. Whereas an interpolation that goes in there, you know, 6 or 8,000 RPM and just beep. And it's like there's no force. It's like you probably wouldn't even have to hold the material down. It's just a little, and a down cut end mill, it's pushing it down anyway. So, and then also, as any wear occurs, or, you know, eyelets, if you're having a little bit of a tight fit or whatever, you can just tweak the tool offset to have like a little bit of a bigger hole. Whereas a drill, as soon as it starts drilling undersized, it's like a whole new drill, which is not expensive, but it's just less
No, but
control.
it's all time. Like that's where I'm right now. I'm so used to doing things by hand. So it was interesting working through the folders this time because as I'm learning more machining, I really saw where I'm like, wow, I was leaving these folders really far away from being finished. And there's just, I'm just seeing like the next stages where I'm like, this work is not the valuable work. This is not the value I add to making something. This is literally just grunt work, you know? So I think there's a big part of that where it is like, you let the efficient things be efficient. I think that's like thoughtful product design, where like spending more time on a feature that is not warranted is just a waste of resources, you know?
And it always comes down to me, for me, is like, okay, customer gives me a dollar. How am I spending the dollar? Because I want to spend the dollar on the things that they notice, that they care about, that they see, that matter. If I spend the dollar on things that I'm spending it on my own time inefficiently, it's like they don't notice that I did, that I reamed all these holes by hand and the machine could have done that. You know what I mean? It's like they don't notice that. If the machine could have done it as good as me, it's not that I'm trying to save time per se. It's that I want to reallocate that time to improving the product where it counts and where they notice, you
Well,
know?
I think that's a big component of like the handmade versus CNC or however people put it. Right, like how you look at work. I think having come from a completely handmade background, and then having experience in, like, as I've developed processes around CNC, but also like manufacturing, like mass manufacturing, like where value is added, I think for me is different. Like, it something being done completely by hand doesn't add inherent value for me. Certain things done by hand do. Gunsmithing
Which is
is
where
like
the
a
focus is.
great example of this, right? Where you're like, you buy a custom 1911 and it's like, well, it might be on a production part set, but the time that someone is utilizing their hand skills on it is the thing that increases the value and upgrades the performance. That
And
to
it's the
me is
details.
valuable time, right?
Well,
I
and
don't want someone to like, I don't necessarily care if someone like is hand machining the frame or something. And I get that some people do, but it's like at a point of like, no, this is a good starting point. Now your hand work really matters, you know?
And if you think about, like, let's say just a round number, like let's say we're talking about a $1,000 custom folder. It's like if you're doing it 100% by hand, there's like $800 worth of fabrication, basically, and then like $200 worth of finishing effort. Whereas if you have a CNC helping you, you can knock it down to, let's say it's $300 or $400 worth of value in the fabrication, but now you have the opportunity to put $500 more towards the finish
The
and
finishes.
towards
Dude,
the
like,
details.
you know, or Jens, like Anso, right, of Denmark. He's a great example of that, where it's like the product, it feels like a custom that he made 10 years
Yes,
ago. They're
perfect
beautiful.
example.
Sinkovich, right? Well, Sinkovich almost doesn't count. I was gonna say like the designs with like Shirogorov, right? Where, because Sinkovich is like full custom, but like so many of like the Shirogorov knives have that Sinkovich influence. It's like you look and you're like, they're all different, man. Like the finishes, the materials, like they're beautiful. I've used Chris Reeve as an example of this for years and years, because like to pick one up is to pick up a custom. If it wasn't just expressly said like we are like a production company, kind of, right? Like it's that time you're like, man, that is good. And I think that's always been my goal with it, where I'm like, it's not pure volume. It's to allow me to add value where I think my skill set is.
Yes, add
Right.
value in a calculated way. Because you look at two, like we're in a good example, because you look at, we sell at the high end a $300 fixed blade. There are quite a few $300 fixed blades out there. The difference between them, we have a lot of the same materials and stuff, and I'm not making a value judgment that we're superior in any way. I'm just saying the difference between multiple $300 knives is, where did the $300 go in the knife? You know what I mean? And so it's like, you can, before you even design a knife or do anything, you can almost think of your business model in that regard of like, I can see they're focusing their dollars over here on this aspect. If I can economize that aspect and put the money over here, it differentiates me. And it's the same materials, maybe it's the same price point, but like, you've economized the thing that they're so focused on and moved the money somewhere else, and then you can totally differentiate. And it's like you're just playing with a value proposition. And that's kind of our whole business model is if they're spending a lot of money and time on something that you feel like you can do efficiently, don't just take that and run and say, oh, we have better margins than them. Take the margin and put it
Just move
somewhere
it.
else. Put it somewhere
You
else.
move the margin. I totally agree. Yeah, man, this stuff, it's really interesting. I don't know. It's very fun. Trying to think, man, other thing, like you and I both always are watching kind of the overall market. The last time we were talking, I feel like we were, kind of curious about how tariffs would affect things. Obviously, like that's great. Didn't there's some areas where it's like moved it a little bit, but it wasn't like didn't follow through with like the big shock, right? Anything else that you're seeing currently that's been interesting to you?
yeah, we did. Magnacut's no longer USA made.
Right.
That's a huge deal. It is made in, is it Sweden, I believe?
Okay, what is
And
the, I forget the factory that's doing it?
Erasteel.
Aerosteel. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So they purchased Crucible.
Yep.
They bought them out of the bankruptcy. I don't know if they're still making anything at Crucible, if they've rehabilitated that facility or not, but I know for a fact that Magnacut is,
Specifically.
as of the last like four or five sheets of Magnacut we bought, it is no longer USA made.
Is Carpenter doing it too? Did it, or am I like that
They
wrong?
might be assisting Niagara in other
Okay.
ways, but Magnacut at least, it,
Specifically, okay.
yeah, I specifically talked to Bob Shibala that the Magnacut we are
Okay.
buying is from overseas.
Okay.
Which, it's good quality stuff. We've run, I went, we brought in the sheets. I talked to Ronnie about surface grinding. Is there any difference? We've been looking at it, milling it, grinding it. Is there any difference? We haven't perceived any difference. Part of it is that Niagara is the one that still cut. Niagara receives it as an ingot, which is like, I don't even know how big they
Oh,
are, but
wow.
we're talking tons. And they cut it up and they roll it flat. So as far as any surface on the
Process
sheet
wise,
that we see is still Niagara, so there's no perceivable difference.
Yeah, it would be the melt that could be different, but
So that is just something notable. There is the occurrence of Magnamax now, which is a new sister to Magnacut. It is, we've got a piece of it, we've run some knives with it. It is not going to be available like for actual use and purchase and volume for probably
Yeah,
towards
you
the end of the
basically got
year.
some like demo steel.
Exactly. And
Which is
it's
sick.
just a higher edge retention Magnacut family member, so it's not a replacement unless that's the application you're going for. I think it's probably a great fit for folders. I don't think it really makes sense for us because we do have to retain a degree of toughness that's pretty high in an outdoor fixed blade. Maybe the Overland Sport could appear in Magnamax, and we'd kind of make sure people understand that like if this is a true EDC knife and you're not batoning, I'm not saying Magnamax isn't tough. I'm just saying it's more
Well, and you just
of an
don't
edge
know, we don't know
retention.
yet.
So it's just they're pursuing like the more M390 end of the edge retention, but M390 really struggles in the toughness side, so they're trying to keep that Magnacut balance of like a respectable toughness, but pushing on the edge retention, which I think is cool. I think it's probably going to be a folder steel of folder steels if
Yeah,
it
this stuff, I
is
mean,
what they
so
say.
much of this, it's like, man, I still have, like older steels, non-super steels that I really like. It's fun. I think it's fun. It creates like just optionality where you can
Yeah,
kind of
I
take
still
it
love
to the
A2.
nth. But like, yeah, man, but like so we're at a point where our steels are just so good. They really function well. Okay, that's steel related. You're wearing a Worksharp hat. We're both kind of consider ourselves like friends of the brand, I guess. They've come on super hard with their knife line, which has been awesome to see. It seems like they're going about it in a really interesting way, which is they're going after building community, which is smart. They've got a really good Facebook group. They're being super transparent in kind of the process and really engaging. It's been it's actually been really fun to watch.
Yeah, it's
You
cool
can
they came
see
out
some of
swinging. And
yeah, right?
I
Like,
mean, a
it just
brand
came
like
out
that
hard.
could have mailed it in. They could
Yep.
have it. You would
You would
expect
almost
a brand
expect,
like
right?
that,
Yeah.
yeah, to just come in very lukewarm with like it's just a, you know, a knife that has the hot button materials that has our colors and logo. Like you would just kind
Yep.
of, but they came in with engineering solutions that nobody'd seen before. They came in with shapes and form factors that are unique. It's like
Yeah.
they act
And
like a
like
knife
risky. Some
company.
of the stuff they're doing is like they're doing what they want to do. And that to me is always impressive, right? Because you could, in between mailing it in and doing what they're doing, are like safer bets also, right? They are actually like taking risks, experimenting. The one of the most interesting things to me has just been seeing how they're actually approaching like the engineering. Like I sent you that crazy the sharpening fixture they have where it's like an articulated arm. I mean, that stuff is, I mean, they're spending time on, to quote my good friend, the process is the product. Like they are spending so much time on the process of how those knives are built that it's really, really freaking cool.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
So,
'Cause they're, I
yeah.
mean, they're just the products they make. I mean, in hindsight, yes, it makes sense that they would do it right like this because you look at their other products on the sharpening side and
Right.
they're to go to that value proposition conversation where they're like packing innovation in, which is huge, but putting the vo money where it matters because they're like those guided stone sharpeners that they do. They came into a market that used to be, it was like this was a $500 sharpener. If you wanted a true guided stone sharpener, like at least
Or if
250,
not much
and
more than that, I would say like what?
yeah,
Yeah,
if
like 500 to
thousands,
1500 for like the pr super premium ones.
yeah, even like a Lansky or what's the other one? Not the Lansky. There was one I had, really con anyway. I think I spent
Yeah, there's
$250 on
Lansky,
it.
Wicked Edge. Like, I mean,
Yeah,
that was
there's
kind of the
another one.
deal.
And but yeah, then they come in and it's like, look at the injection molding they did. Look, they put aluminum where you needed aluminum, they injection molded where you didn't need it, and they just packed the features in and the price point. I recommend their sharpeners to like everyone because I get asked a lot, like, how should I sharpen them? I bought a knife from you, how should I sharpen it right here? And it's like they just do it. I like them.
Yeah, they really do hit that like value proposition. It's thoughtful, you know. It's like the everyman sharpener. You can get in really inexpensive, you know, and that's a thing. It's like I'm sure a lot of their current customer base even can like, you know, as you see prices change, it's like you're like, oh, that's expensive. But in relation to a lot of what's on the market, it's like very affordable and like very good value. So yeah, I'm just excited to see where it goes. I mean, we see different brands do things with knives, and if you're not, it's interesting because Worksharp is knife industry, but knife adjacent. And now as they're bringing in knives, like I look at it and I'm like, oh yeah, you guys are doing it in like a knifey way. You're not doing it in a super corporate, like slap a logo on a
Yeah, give
production
us some
model.
SKUs. Yeah.
Yeah, get us
We
some
need knife
SKUs.
SKUs. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you're doing
Yeah.
things in a way where it's like, oh, you might mess up. Like you probably have run into some problems already. And that's like,
Yeah.
I don't know. That's
I've
awesome.
I recently had a revelation that like the word SKU is a
Yeah.
dangerous word.
Ooh.
It's I thought a lot like I was thinking about our business model and stuff, and I was thinking about, you know, a lot of people will say, and I'm not, I hope I don't come across critical at all in any way, but like a lot of people will say, like, we want a SKU here. We want this to be a
Right.
few more SKUs. It makes sense from a practical standpoint. Like in a larger company, like you're talking about SKUs when you're talking about different products.
Yeah.
And it's like, but that almost this looking at it from a SKU standpoint, it's like you're looking at numbers, not products
Right.
inherently. And
Right.
it's like, I don't know, it's not that the word itself has that much power, but like it comes from a place of possibly overlooking some core things. And I look at someone like Worksharp that makes knives like that,
Right.
and I'm not saying they didn't use that word for sure. I'm just saying that like they didn't look at it from the spirit of like we just need SKUs. You know what I mean? They
Yeah.
looked at
No,
it
no, no, no,
from
no. That's spot on. It's hard. Doing things the
Yeah.
hard way is hard. Like, you
Yeah.
know. So I guess that I don't know. That's one of the more fun things that I've seen kind of recently. Yeah, and other than that, man, like custom market, like you said earlier, demand around some of these products is not indicative of the market as a whole because there's always a solid demand for the things that are limited. I think overall knife industry like still down. Summer's hard to tell,
Yeah.
but good seeing like good people do good things and
Yeah.
you know, movement. It's all you can ask
Yeah.
for.
Yeah, there is a, we've said it before, but there is an overall softening, probably
Yeah.
macroeconomic and a lot of things, but like there's the summer that I'm noticing, but I'm also noticing probably macro as
Right.
well. So
Yeah.
things are going good. I think for a lot of people, things are satisfactory. You know what I
Right.
mean? But like it's different. It's not the frenzy like we've
Yeah.
seen in other eras.
Yeah. And that's always like my goal is like never rely on the boom time as like the indicator. It's like I try to average, man. Like I want consistency. I want growth, but I don't want lottery, right? And if you do get that, it's like you use it like that, right? You're like, ooh, windfall. How can I make the most of this windfall and not expect it to continue?
And
Right.
all and yeah, for us looking at the seasonality in the summer, it's like I don't want summer to be survival mode. I
Yeah, that's
can
great.
make it, I can make it be survival mode if I
Yeah.
scale to where we can meet Q4 demand with ease.
Yeah.
That make that feels pretty good in Q4
Yeah.
in December when you're like, holy cow, we can fulfill we can feed every mouth.
Right.
Anybody that wants when we're here.
Yep.
That means you might be a little overproducing. You know what I mean? Because summer is
Yep.
not going to be like this. So if Q4 is not a strain, I think to me that's going to be a tell that like you have too much capacity. You got to be
Ooh, that's
careful.
okay. So that's a great dude. I think we wrap it on that, but that's like a solid indicator. So coming through the summer, it's like for all of us, we're probably done with some shows, or if you're on the production side, you're running a little bit slower. What are the indicators in your business right now that allow you to make some decisions for the rest of the year? And how do you avoid like overdoing it too? You know? Cool. Dude, this felt good, man. I look forward to let's just start to try to get back on some kind of normalist schedule. Thank you guys for
Very
all the
much enjoyed it.
feedback. Walking around the show, one of the reasons we're doing this today was just like so many people coming up and asking about the pod or like giving feedback or like telling us somewhere that it helped or it really means a lot to us. And that's why we're doing this, you know. So thank you guys. Thanks for hanging
Appreciate you
out.
guys, and I appreciate your patience. If you're
Yeah.
listening to this, that means you were willing to step aside for 3 months and then come back. So
Yeah.
if you're here, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. All right, man. Have a good day, you guys. We will see you around. Leave us a comment. Let us know if you want us to like dive into anything. And we'll talk to you soon.
Peace.